You're listening right now to Reality Radio, recording from Wave Farm and the Bard College Conservatory of Music and John Cage Trust's presentation of Reality Radio, a four-month durational project from February to May 2015, featuring a continuous audio surveillance feed from the Bard College Percussion Studio, headed by So Percussion. Reality Radio positions those who move throughout the studio, students, professors, administrators, visitors, maintenance crews, in the role of performer with listening audiences as ever-present observers. In conjunction with Reality Radio, Waveform's WGXC will feature a series of special live broadcasts February 7th, March 7th, April 25th, and May 23rd. Visit WGXC.org for more information and click on the Reality Radio link on the left-hand side of the page at WGXC.org.
In Moscow is booyah!
This is Tom Rowe. You're tuned into the Saturday afternoon show on WGXC, and today we're here with the Bard College Conservatory of Music, or a few students and teachers, I guess, from the Bard Percussion Program. We have David Deggy. Is that how you say your name?
Deg.
David Deg. John Colazzo. John Colazzo and Petra Ellick.
Yes.
And David, you are the teacher. What is your role there?
I'm the percussion teaching fellow. It's a two-year graduate level position. It's modeled after the piano fellowship that Bard College Conservatory has. So I am currently starting my second of four semesters at serving the percussion studio.
And where did you come from? All over, is that what I heard?
Yeah, most recently I lived in Hungary for a year. I was working at the Liszt Academy as a student of Zoltán Rauch, and it was funded by a Fulbright grant, and I recently came back and started at Bard in the fall.
And how did you get into find yourself interested in percussion?
Well, it was a very, very unextraordinary, typical percussionist story of it was time to choose a band instrument towards the end of elementary school, and I knew I wanted to play percussion. They seemed like they had the most fun. And all of the elementary music teachers, whenever they were grooming the students who would actually join band and not and not just quit after a year, or kids that thought it was silly or whatever. They always emphasize, now percussion's very difficult. And I thought, well, if it's difficult, then bring it on. So
do you like math too?
I do. I enjoy math. I enjoy the analytical side to music. And so being a percussionist and encountering all of these different types of music that have really, really interesting structures and even simpler, more transparent structures that are entire pieces written by non-traditional notation, sometimes lists of words or numbers, and you apply certain rhythmic processes to those things. Very, very fascinating. It's definitely a heady number side to things.
And Petra and John, where did you guys come from?
I'm from Hungary, so not close to here.
and John, where are you from?
Originally, I was born in Manhattan, but I've been kind of a nomad for my life as well. I live in Florida right now, but in Orlando, Florida right now. But I'm here, back to school, kind of almost back home.
And what about you two? How did you get into percussion?
Well, my story is a little bit interesting, or more interesting than David's.
I bet it is.
Yeah, because my parents are musicians too. So my father is a marching band conductor, and when I was, I think I was 7 or 8, they always left me with my grandparents, and I got bored of that. I really didn't want to stay at home, and they had a tour in Poland. So I stand in front of them, and I tell them that I really want to go, so I'm not going to stay at home. And my dad told me that I only can go if I play an instrument, and that I play the piano, so that's not so helpful in the marching band. And finally, he told me that since I can read the music, I can just stand back there with those guys and then just pick one instrument and play that rhythm which is in the music. I was like, all right, that sounds reasonable and doable. So basically, I started there, and it seemed fun, and I loved it. So I went to secondary school in Hungary with that, and that's how I basically ended up being a percussionist.
And John, how about you?
So when we were in, my grandfather used to own a building in Harlem, and downstairs there was a Chinese place, like a couple storefronts down. And whenever my mom and dad used to get Chinese food, they would grab a bunch of extra chopsticks. And my grandmother used to keep pots and pans in the lowest cupboards under the sink. So I would pull them out and I'd try to set them up in a makeshift drum set type of thing. I remember trying to figure out how to do cymbals. That was the hardest part. I tried to get them up there. But that's like kind of the first thing. And then when I was 5, I was in Jersey at that point. That was when I had my first drum set. And I still have that drum set today. That's the only drum set I've ever had. So it's just kind of stuck with me for a while. And then when I got into middle school in Florida, that was the first time I learned how to read music and saw, I even see an instrument like the timpani or xylophone or snare, or orchestral snare drums or anything like that. And then the rest is history from that.
Now, is that where you guys are? What goes on at the Bard College Percussion Program? Are you introducing them to new instruments, new rhythms, new ways of approaching instruments?
Well, by the time percussionists major in music in college, they've been exposed to most of the standard percussion instruments that you would find at the back of the orchestra. Also, by this point in time, most people have played some sort of exposure to percussion chamber music, which introduces a lot of non-traditional instruments, found objects, things that you would find in a John Cage musical score, or a lot of them have also been exposed to the music of Steve Reich and other important percussion composers. And so a lot of what we do is kind of refine their skill set as percussionists, and some of them, you know, there is a variation in the background. Some people are maybe more marching band focused or more drum set focused, or maybe somebody has a really strong piano background but needs some help with technical skill. And we spend a lot of time playing contemporary chamber music for percussion. The directors of the percussion program at Bard, So Percussion, they're a Brooklyn-based percussion quartet. They've been around for, gosh, 16 years now, and this is kind of the next step for them, is to share part of their knowledge and experience and forming this percussion program.
And they're very well known internationally as a major percussion group.
Yes, very, very much so. They're kind of the cool younger guys. Do you think they consider themselves to still be young?
Having
been together for 16 years is quite an accomplishment at this point. They're one of the few full-time percussion quartets out there. When I was in Hungary, I studied with the Amadinda percussion group, who just celebrated their 30th year. Also another famous percussion group, Nexus. They've been around for much longer than that. And so percussion is quite a unique group, and they've done wonders to expand the repertoire, and especially here in the United States, and generate a much wider interest in percussion music.
And how have they done that? Do they take on different kinds of works that most percussion groups don't, or they approach them different ways, what's different?
They function in many ways like your average rock band would. And as a matter of fact, they are self-described as a band of percussionists. So they've played standard contemporary percussion repertoire, but they also have written their own music over the years. They know each other's playing so well, and when you see them play together, you can definitely see that. And so teaching those communication skills and those musical sensibilities of how to be sensitive to another person's playing as you yourself are making, you know, your own sounds and playing as part of the ensemble is a really important part of what they do.
And we've got you guys here in part because of with Soak Percussion, we've set up this reality radio from now until May, I guess, where people can tune into your rehearsal space. Basically, is that how it works?
A second home space kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, so the percussion studio at the conservatory really is for all of us involved in the program. So myself and Petra and John, and there are a total of 8 students in addition to myself, and they spend a whole lot of time.
This is a relatively new facility too, right?
It is. It was opened 2012?
2 years.
2 years ago.
Yeah. So
2013.
Yeah, 2013 maybe. So it's a relatively new facility. We have 2 separate rooms comprise the percussion studio space, and the reality radio equipment is set up in the larger of the 2 rooms. So the main space where rehearsals happen, a lot of personal practice and things of that sort. Sometimes you'll hear shuffling around and things like that.
Down.
It's a good room to tap into. A lot happens in that room.
It's a busy space. Yes.
Yeah.
So people can tune in at all hours and maybe hear somebody cleaning up or mice. If somebody didn't clean up.
I hope there's not mice in the studio.
Having percussion sessions late at night, you don't think that's what happens there at 4 or 5 in the morning?
Maybe not at that point, but I think a lot of these guys do play pretty late into the night.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Well, you guys can talk a little bit. Maybe it makes sense for you guys to talk a little bit about how you best use your time since you live on the campus, and you guys are both engaged in a dual degree program,
yeah.
And so finding the time to practice is really challenging for these since they're undergraduate students and they're engaged in a double degree program.
Yeah. So basically, our schedule is pretty busy, so the finding the practice time is really hard. So that's why usually we have, I mean, not usually, but mostly we have practice time at from 8 until, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like to practice until, like, midnight or so.
Yeah, for me personally, I just do better at night. I'm not the greatest morning person, but I know I can get stuff done at night. So... Yeah, for me to have the studio on campus, it's really, really great. It's just like 100% access 24/7 for whatever you need to do. But it is true. Like, usually our days are filled up with so many things ranging from classes to rehearsals, and also you have to eat in between. And then if you don't have a car on campus, it's like a trek to walk, especially in the snow. So it's a pretty... it's a tricky place to, like, figure out your time schedule, but, you know, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
it's working so far.
For sure. Yeah. And since we have this new building, it's pretty far. Like, it's one side of the campus, but it's, like, approachable. It's a good place. Because in my freshman year, we had this house in basically the middle of the forest. Like, the most... like the scariest place on campus. I'm not kidding. There was one night when I asked my friend to come to practice with me because I was so afraid in the dark. So I didn't want to go there by myself.
You need a practice buddy.
Yeah. But it was a trumpet player, so it yeah. So it just but now it's this building is just awesome. It's really great. Mm.
Do percussionists usually get this short end of or get hidden away so they're quiet off? I mean, the noise is off.
Yeah.
I think we're shoved off as much as possible in that. It's not the biggest building in the world, so we're kind of off to the side as much as possible, but yeah.
I think it depends on the school, but I think percussionists everywhere run into the same problem. It's this constant battle of having enough instruments versus having enough space. If you have both, it's a very luxurious situation. But the percussion repertoire, and for that matter, orchestral repertoire, calls sometimes for specialty instruments. And whenever you acquire those instruments, you need a place to put them. And then you also still need a place to practice and rehearse and set everything up. And so it's a constant battle to find that balance of, hey, we have everything we need and we have a place to put it all. So that's my problem, not their problem. That's part of my job is to figure out how to organize everything.
And how much are the so percussion folks working? Are they there all the time, or is it like part of the week or part of the month, or how does that?
Well, the entire conservatory faculty, well, not the entire conservatory faculty. I know most of the applied teachers are not resident. They come in from the city, so they're not on campus regularly. They will come in specifically to spend their time teaching and coaching chamber music ensembles and things like that.
And it's supposed to be 12 times a semester or something?
13.
Like 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it averages to about once a week. Sometimes there's more space in between week and a half to 2 weeks between lesson times. But I think it actually works to the students' advantage because they will come in and their attention is completely given to instruction and teaching. They don't have other things that they need to worry about, and the students know that. The students know that they have them 100% at their disposal. Mm-hmm. But when they're not there, it gives the students the space to really work with their assignments, to struggle with them without concern that one of the SO guys will, you know, pop their head in the room and say, "Hey, what are you doing? How are you doing their time?" It really gives them a lot of independence to learn how to be professional musicians and self-impose structure to get accomplished whatever they need to do.
Yeah, and I think for me personally, like, actually that aspect of the SO guys, like, last semester they were doing a European tour, and there was this one point where they weren't around for 3 weeks, and there was so much time, and it's just, like, really interesting to have that amount of time and know what you have to have done and what your responsibilities are, and just to allocate that time and your resources as much as you can. It's just, like, it's a good experience, and I personally like it. You know, it's just, like, I can work to my own devices and figure out how it best works for me. So,
well, and some of that, I think first of all, they're really good about communicating when they're not on campus.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're very available via email or phone calls if necessary. And also, that's part of my job, is to kind of be their eyes and ears on the ground, so to speak. And I not only do I have the opportunity during the course of my work at Bard to use them as a resource, but I am in turn a resource for the rest of the students. And so, yeah. So instead of one of the SO guys popping in and say, "What are you doing?" That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm the one who
it's
pops
still,
in.
It's still equally as intimidating, but.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And are you guys, you're going to be on this reality radio, I guess, around the clock for the next couple of months. Are you working also for some sort of other public performance? Do students do a public performance, or you do something with the SO percussion people? Are they performing, or what's going on?
Yes, definitely. On April 19th, which is a Sunday afternoon, we will have our kind of fruit of our year-long labor. It's a percussion chamber music concert, and SO Percussion will be performing on that, but the majority of the performance will consist of chamber music projects that the students have been working on all year, and it is kind of the culmination of this year in our chamber music study. And there are a few other opportunities that the students have to perform. In fact, one of them is coming up just in a week and a half. At the Morton Library, they have a children's concert series, and they're bringing in the percussion students to, and the percussion students will be, oh, bless you. Oh, sorry, it's Hungarian. Egészségedre. Szívesen.
Where's the Morton Library?
The Morton Library is in Rhinecliff. It's down just south of Rhinebeck, and that will take place Sunday afternoon, February 8th, and we actually were meeting to discuss the program yesterday. So whoever was tuning into Reality Radio yesterday afternoon may have heard us walking through those planes. So that's another chance to give a public performance. I'd say so far there are usually one or two additional opportunities to perform in public for the students. And of course, that's with the exception of the fact that the students also play in the orchestra. So the conservatory orchestra gives multiple concerts each semester, and the percussion students receive assignments for those concerts as well. And so then you have mixed chamber ensemble projects like the contemporary music series that Joan Tower curates called Music Alive. We got to perform on two pieces for that concert. It was a women's composers concert that took place last October, and that was one of the first projects that I got to participate on when I came on. So,
and then
that was really cool.
If I may, like, on top, sure, of that, it's just like Bard is like a really rich artistic creative community, and one of our good friends in the conductors program, he put up an entire concert with basically a small full orchestra, like, and we played an entire concert, and he's actually doing another one upcoming soon. So just like around Bard, percussionists at Bard, we're kind of like, we could be high in demand. Like, we have those stretches of times where just everybody needs something, And especially last year for us, when there was, we just accepted 3 new students this year. So last year, my first year, there was even less amount of people. So I was being thrown even more things to do. So it's just, it's really, really cool to have, like, on top of this really in-depth and everything kind of included curriculum, that you're just in this environment where people just need you to do things, and it's a good experience, and I love doing it on, you know, either way, you know, so it's exactly what I enjoy about being at Bard.
And if you're just joining us, we are talking with John Collazo, David Degg, and Petra Ellick, the Bard College Conservatory of Music percussion program, and talking a little bit too about the reality radio that's been set up in their rehearsal studio until May, where you can tune in and listen. And I guess you were saying before that the So Percussion guys go away for weeks sometimes at a time, and so that the students have more of a chance to work things out, or woodshop or whatever, and without the So Percussion guys necessarily sticking their heads in and saying, oh, what's that? But now they're going to be able to listen from afar and text or call and basically stick their head in the door, right?
That is accurate. And and they do tune in to the reality radio. It's a very valuable resource for them, just as if, like you said, it's a chance for them to remotely check in every once in a while and see what's happening. And for that matter, they have in the past on those longer stretches, maybe if it's not a week between lessons, but perhaps a 2 weeks or so between lessons, they have done video lessons and things like that. So this is actually now a really hugely valuable resource, because the audio is already there. It's already set up. If they need to make an appointment to have one of the students play for them, the student can literally just walk in the studio and play, and they can offer some feedback.
Sounds great on the microphone too. It sounds really clear and just precise. It was amazing when I first listened to it. It was really awesome.
It does. It's very clear. You have no trouble hearing what happens in that room, which definitely is important to consider every time you step foot in that room.
Yeah. yeah. It is interesting having a microphone where everybody can hear you, and you don't know who might or may not be listening to you.
You guys are going to do some special performance for us today. Is that right? You brought a big giant... What's downstairs?
Yes, downstairs we have a 5-octave marimba, and we also have a couple snare drums, so you'll be hearing some music for marimba and snare drum solos by Petra and myself, respectively.
And pieces are you going to perform?
Well, I think we'll start off with Petra,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm going to play the D minor preludium from the Styx unaccompanied solos for cello. So I'm playing at the time with the first movement, and I'm playing Dolly Clues at the number 6 on the snare drum.
Okay.
I'm going to be playing a piece by a Japanese composer named Akira Miyoshi called Conversation. It's a short 5-movement piece. It's very, very short movements, and it's like really playful, kind of music boxy, up in the upper register of the marimba. And then I'm playing Preludio No. 1 in E minor by Brazilian composer Ney Rosário. And that will be the 11th line. Thank you.
just keep going on to the next one?
I will be playing the last two movements of a nine-movement set of pieces called Windrose Woodcuts, and that was written by a young Hungarian composer named Balázs Juhász. The first of the two movements is entitled A Cedar from Lebanon, and the second movement is called Riding the Tiger. And then I'll be moving on to a short snare drum piece composed by Jason Truding, who's actually one of the members of So Percussion. He wrote it for a snare drum competition in Atlanta a few years back, and it is called Thank You Blank. So you'll be hearing a lot of interesting sounds. At some point, you'll hear me describing a person's physical attributes, and later on, some more speech text where I'm talking about why I like that particular drummer. But the point is not to know who I'm talking about, but it is a source of generating interesting sounds and sentences, and it is a very non-traditional and very creative snare drum piece.
All right, let's listen. Thank you.
Crow T Robot from Mystery Science Theater 3000 here on 90.7 WGXC. What's the C stand for? Crow, I'm pretty sure. Yep. Maybe not.
One, two, three, four, five. He has a lean build, a chiseled face, and long, shaggy hair.
So we're back in that. Those were some live performances from David Daig, John Collazo, and Petra Ellick. And David, tell why did you pick those pieces to perform today?
Well, the marimba pieces that I brought, I learned the entire set of Windrose woodcuts when I was living abroad last year, and it hasn't been played very much even in Hungary, much less in the United States. And I feel really passionately about it, that it's very, very intriguing and wonderful music. And I actually have plans to do a recording of the entire set of pieces that will happen later on in the semester, I think at the end of February. And so I just wanted to bring that as a nice little preview of that set of pieces. And the second piece, the Jason Trudings, Thank You Blank, I've been playing it for a little while, and I just really think it's a really fun, concise piece of music.
And John, what about you? What about the pieces that you performed?
For me, a Conversation by Akira Miyoshi, that was just a piece of music that I wanted to play. Japanese marimba music, stylistically and just like the way it operates, is very different than music on the Western hemisphere of the world. So that, for me, was kind of like a foot in the door to get more exposure to that, to the Japanese music marimba music repertoire. And also, in the next coming weeks or so, I'm actually going to be recording that piece as well, for video for Vic Firth, who is the company that made basically everything that we played with, all the sticks and mallets. So, and then on top, I played the Rosario Prelude, because firstly, for me, the Miyoshi is just like this awkward, beautiful little melodies just all over the place, kind of at the top of the marimba. And the Preludes, that piece was actually first written as a guitar solo by Ney, and then he later adapted it for marimba. And it was the first marimba solo I ever really played, actually, and I've just loved it ever since. And Ney is also a good friend of mine, and we've talked a lot about that piece, so it's very special to me, and I like the way it sounds. So.
All right, and Petra?
Yeah, I choose this piece because I'm auditioning for the Music Academy of the West. It's a summer festival, so, and that audition is coming up on the 9th of February in the city. And I wanted to bring those pieces. Actually, the Delic Loose Place piece, this is the first time I played that piece, so I was really into that. I really like to play the snare drum, so it's like, I really like that. And the marimba piece that I choose, the Bach, is, I've been playing a lot of Bach pieces, so it's like really close to my heart. In high school, I basically started with all the cello suites. And for this audition, one of the requirements is to play a solo marimba piece. So that's what I chose, and I wanted to bring it for you guys.
All right. And you guys also brought a couple of pre-recorded pieces, too?
Sure. It didn't work out for us to be able to bring enough people to play any sort of live chamber music performances. So we brought three separate recordings of some music that we did get to perform last semester. One of the pieces is John Cage's First Construction in Metal, and we performed that as a part of So Percussion's We Are All Going in Different Directions, which was a 90-minute there's 90 minutes.
Exactly.
91-minute performance of several works by John Cage and inspired by John Cage, and in a lot of moments during the concert, there was a collage of different pieces of his happening, and it was a really, really thoughtful, beautiful program, and so you'll hear our performance that was a part of that show. And then also, I mentioned previously Joan Tower's concert series Music Alive, and the two pieces that we played on that, the first being Julia Wolf's Dark Full Ride. It's a drum set quartet, and we played the first section, which takes place all on hi-hats and ride cymbals. And the second piece is Joan Tower's composition, DNA, for percussion quintet, which we closed out the concert with.
And the third piece, or did I... What's the...
Yeah, so John Cage, First Construction.
I'm mixing up. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I've got it now. Tell us again, February 8th is the show at Rhinecliff?
Yes, in Rhinecliff at the Morton Library. It's mainly geared towards children. It can be kids of all ages. I think we will have children as young as 2 and 3 years old up till, I guess we're all children of somebody, right? So I guess the oldest children will be their parents. However old, it's open to people of all ages, and that's taking place at the Morton Library in Rhinecliff.
And where can folks get more information about that if they want?
I think, I don't know the specific website, but I think if you search for the Morton Library on Google, you can come across their website, which gives information about concerts and events that happen at the library. And we are being billed as the Bard. Look for the words Bard and percussion, and I'm sure you will find it. Sunday, February 8th.
And is there a Bard College Conservatory of Music website or part of the Bard College website?
Yes, you can navigate to it via the Bard. So if you go to bard.edu/conservatory, you can navigate to it and find more information about the percussion program.
And that'll show more information too about that. You said there was an April 19th, is that right, performance?
Yes, it's on the Bard calendar of events. If you go to the conservatory website, you can find information on all of the conservatory events that take place. And our concert will happen Sunday afternoon, April 19th.
Is that at the Fisher Center, or where is it?
It is. I'm pretty sure it'll be at the Fisher Center. So.
And people can also go Google search Reality Radio or go to WGXC.org, /Reality Radio, and click on the listen button. Can they listen through the Bard College page, or is there something set up at the other pages tonight?
I don't believe so, but I know you can also go to johncage.org, and in the bottom right-hand corner, you have a link to the Reality Radio feed.
Because this is set up in conjunction with the John Cage Trust, too, we should say. And so you can listen through the John Cage Trust website or WGXC.org to Reality Radio and the Bard College Percussion Program, and I guess you never know what you might tune into.
That's the beauty of it.
Do you guys have relatives that are listening now, or do you know who's listening yet?
Not yet. It's I think word will gradually get out, and I think at various points in time we'll all get to tell friends and relatives about it.
Actually, there was a funny story kind of thing. So I told my mother about it, but she didn't get the text for a couple hours. So there was a moment when I left the room and somebody else went back in and just started playing piano, just like practicing some random piano pieces that he was working on the side. My mom texted me. She's like, wait, who is that? What are they doing? You know, it's just like, it was nothing percussion.
She didn't think that you played piano?
Yeah.
No, she was like, who? She knows I don't. So yeah, I'm not good at it. But yeah, anybody can listen in. It's kind of cool and creepy at the same time. But it's cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much today. David Degg, John Colazzo, and Petra Ellick. Did I get those names close enough?
Yes.
Thank
you. Yes. From the Bard College Conservatory of Music. And you can tune into them on Reality Radio and February 8th at the Rhinecliff?
Morton Library in Rhinecliff.
And April 19th at the Fisher Center on the Bard College campus.
That's correct.
All right. Thanks so much for coming out today.
Yeah.
Thanks, so
thanks
much.
Tom. All right. Reality Radio is a 4-month durational project from February to May 15th featuring a continuous audio surveillance feed from the Bard College Percussion Studio headed by So Percussion. Reality Radio positions those who move throughout the studio, students, professors, administrators, visitors, maintenance crews, in the role of performer while listening to audiences are ever-present observers, and is a co-presentation of Wavefarm, the Bard College Conservatory of Music, and the John Cage Trust. Let's listen to a little more Reality Radio. Thank you.